at 12 days to the 2024 presidential and parliamentary elections. Hello and welcome to Join Us Prime with me, Samuel Kojo-Brace. Coming up this hour, Sraj recommends investigation and possible prosecution of members of the Board of Trustees of the National Cathedral after recommending the termination of the contract, describing it as illegal and void. We have details. As Sraj says, the construction contract awarded to Rebadi Company Limited raises reasonable suspicion of corruption and corruption-related offences. Also coming up, Ghana's macroeconomic stability is said to be improving rapidly as the government claims the country's economy has returned to a growth trajectory to pre-COVID times.
This economy is back to the growth trajectory of the period before COVID.
Economists vehemently disagree, describing such conclusions as a narrow way of assessing the country's economic growth.
That is a narrow way of looking at it. If you see the economy has recovered broadly, then you want to look beyond just the GDP.
And Sonon Asogle power plant resumes operations after shutting down for more than a month in protest against the indebtedness of ECG to the tune of $259 million, more as the government makes a reasonable amount of the debt. Now, top Christian leaders who served or are serving on the National Cathedral Board of Trustees are facing possible prosecution as the Commission on Human Rights and Administrative Justice, Sraj, recommend that they are investigated and possibly prosecuted. It follows Sraj's recommendation of an immediate termination of the National Cathedral construction contract. The contract, which Sraj found, was illegally awarded to Rebadi Limited in a sum of a staggering $312 million, has been the subject of public controversy following a series of publications by NDC MP for North Town, Samuel Okojo-Tabalakwa. The MP had claimed that the contract was illegally awarded and the state was releasing public funds for the project without parliamentary approval. The National Cathedral was a central case in NDC's failed attempt to censure former Finance Minister Ken Oforiatta, who authorized most of the releases. After months of investigation, following a petition filed by the North Town MP, Sraj has not issued its decision. Now, Kwaku Asante of our Legal Affairs Desk has been combing through the 165-page report and joins us with details. Kwaku, first, remind us briefly of the antecedent of this particular matter and how the case ended up at Sraj.
Well, Brace, in the last few years, we've been hearing from Samuel Okojo-Tabalakwa, who has accused the government of recklessly spending state resources on a promise made by President Akufo-Addo when he was seeking the high office of the president in 2016. The president promised that if he won the 2024 election, he was going to build the National Cathedral. Many have said that was his personal promise. It was not a promise to be funded by the state. But when he won, the government decided to construct this National Cathedral. Initially, we were told government was only going to provide the seed funding, but so far, government has pumped in more than 250 million Ghana cedis. Some of the Okojo-Tabalakwa had been publishing series of documents. Ultimately, he ended up petitioning Commission of Human Rights and Administrative Justice to investigate allegations of conflict of interest, allegations of corruption, and a host of other issues. And that is what has culminated in this report published by Sraj.
Now, what's the basis on which Sraj is concluding that the contract was illegally awarded and therefore must be terminated?
So to quote directly from the document that has been published, it says that this contract was awarded to Rebadi Company Limited for a total of $312 million. That is the amount involved in this. Again, Sraj says this contract was awarded by the Board of Trustees to the contractor without recourse to the concurrent approval by the Central Tender Review Committee, a key requirement of the Procurement Act having regards to the sum involved. According to Sraj, given the huge amount involved, there must have been a concurrent approval by the Central Tender Review before this project would have been awarded. So that's one. Again, he says, the National Cathedral of Ghana did not strictly comply with the rules of the public procurement when it purported to select and award this contract to Rebadi Company Limited. Again, it ultimately concludes that a contract awarded to Rebadi Company Limited for the construction of the National Cathedral was illegal and void ab initio, and that the procurement breaches that occasioned the award of this contract to Ibadi Company Limited raises reasonable suspicion of corruption and corruption-related offences, Brice.
Now, Schwartz says the Board of Trustees, which is made up of top Christian leaders, must be investigated and possibly prosecuted. First, who are these persons and why did Schwartz make this recommendation?
So, in terms of the membership, Apostle Professor Opokoenina, a former chair of the Church of Pentecost, he chairs the National Cathedral Board. There is also Charles Palmer Buckle, is a Catholic Archbishop, Most Reverend Bishop Justice Ofe Akufi, Reverend, Right Reverend Professor Emmanuel Mati, a former moderator of the Presbyterian Church of Ghana. There is also Most Reverend T.K. Awachi Pratt, Archbishop Nicholas Duncan Williams, Reverend Dr. Joyce Ayi, Bishop Doug Heward Mills, Reverend Eastwood Anaba, Reverend Victor Kusibuatin, and Reverend Dr. Frimpong Manso. There's a number of issues that is raised with the Board of Trustees in terms of how they did their job. Ultimately, it is this Board of Trustees that awarded a contract that has been supervising the construction of the National Cathedral. The Schwartz says its investigation has pointed that the contract was actually void ab initio, and that, in fact, there was no legal basis upon which the Board of Trustees should have awarded a contract to Ibadi Company Limited to do this construction. Again, there have been matters raised as regards to corruption and corruption-related offences, for which reason Schwartz has now referred all these top Christian leaders to both the OSP and the Attorney General, each of them to look up the specific of the offences, alleged offences, that fall within their domain and proceed to prosecute, Brace.
Now, one key issue has to do with the conflict of interest against Reverend Kusibuatin. How did Schwartz conclude on this matter?
Well, the matter having to do with a conflict of interest involved the transfer of 2.6 million Ghana cedis from a company known as JNS Talent Company Limited, which Reverend Victor Kusibuatin, a member of the Board of Trustees, is a director of. That company allegedly advanced the loan of 2.6 million Ghana cedis to the cathedral for payment to the contractors because certain funds had not been made available at the time by the government. And so Okudosa Blackwa alleged that in the documents, no document had shown or proved that the 2.6 million Ghana cedis was actually deserved and that the company was supposed to be paid any such amount. So as says, it has investigated that and has come to a satisfactory conclusion that the $2.6 million cedis, I beg your pardon, was actually a soft loan advanced by this company that Victor Kusibuatin is a director of to the National Cathedral Project without interest. And so when it comes to this matter of conflict of interest, Schwartz says it did not find anything credible in that respect.
Oh, I'm grateful to you, Kweku Asante, for joining. Let's bring in Adam Senan, who is an anti-corruption campaigner and convener of the Citizen Movement Against Corruption. Adam, I'm grateful to you for joining. What must happen now after this particular report by Schwartz?
Well, we are in a country that has laws, and laws must be followed. Schwartz recommends that the Auditor General should conduct a forensic audit because they are not seized with the competency to see whether Ghana received value for money. I think that's a welfare effort to make sure that nobody took advantage of the processes. They also, because of the breaches of Act 663, recommend further investigation and, if necessary, prosecution. I'm hoping that the investigations may exonerate some of the persons. Mind you, in the list of members of the board, your colleague mentioned names like Doug Heward Mills, who I believe distanced himself at some point, and there may be others who also did so. So you may want to cross-check that list of who is still on the board. So the rule of law must be followed. And it's an embarrassing situation, but there are lessons to be learned from it.
All right. Grateful to you for joining us here, Adam Senanu. Away from that, Ghana is set to select a vendor to build its first nuclear power plant by end of year to augment the country's current energy supply. These assurances coming amidst rising concerns over sustainable energy supply and Ghana's mounting debt to independent power producers. The country is intensifying efforts to incorporate nuclear energy into its power energy generation mix. Over the next 10 days, Ghana will host the Integrated Regulatory Review Service, IRRS, mission to assess and enhance its nuclear energy strategy. Collins Frimpong has more in this report.
By the end of the year, would have selected a vendor to build its first nuclear power plant. To enhance the effectiveness of Ghana's regulatory infrastructure for nuclear, radiation, radioactive waste and transport safety, a 10-day engagement with an integrated regulatory review service mission by the International Atomic Energy Agency is currently ongoing in Accra, where Dr. Robert Bright Malko-Sobaji, Director of Power responsible for Nuclear and Alternative Energy at the Ministry of Energy, reviewed Ghana's nuclear power timetable.
I mean, by the early 2030s. And we've taken all the steps to complete our phase one, and we are in phase two, where we are to identify the vendor. We've gone through all the vendor process, vendor identification process, and by the end of the year, all things being equal, we should be able to announce the vendor who is going to build Ghana's first nuclear power plant. So we are just at the finalized stages of identifying a vendor, and I'm sure by the end of the year we should be able to announce.
The IRRS mission review is expected to help align Ghana's nuclear power policy with international standards. Chief Director at the Ministry of Environment, Patrick Nomue, explains.
And they'll be here to work for 2 weeks, and during that 2 weeks they'll review everything that has to do with nuclear power. They'll talk to relevant stakeholders. They'll look at the security and safety arrangements that we have in place in terms of our laws and regulations, what policies we are coming up with, what review mechanisms do we have, how the Nuclear Regulatory Authority itself will be staffed and how it will operate, what is the assurance that they will be independent in their operations. All these things will be reviewed by the mission, and then they'll make recommendations. The beauty of this mission is that they have come at a time when we have developed all the policies, but we have not approved them yet. We have not passed them yet. So they will have the opportunity to make recommendations to improve the policies that have been done. So when they go to cabinet for approval and subsequently to parliament for approval, they will meet international standards. And then when we implement them, they will be in line with the requirements of the IAEA.
Ghana aims to include nuclear power in its electricity generation mix by mid-2030. Collins Frimpong's report for Joy News.
Now, economists are questioning government's claims that the economy has returned to its pre-COVID growth trajectory. Finance Minister Dr. Amin Adams, speaking on a campaign platform recently, asserted that the economy is rebounding with macroeconomic stability rapidly returning. He highlighted that key indicators are improving daily, citing a 2023 growth rate of 2.9%, surpassing the projected 1.5%. Dr. Amin also reviewed that the half-year economic performance for 2024 reached 5.8%, significantly higher than the anticipated 3.1%. According to him, these figures confirm that the economy is regaining strength. However, Professor Godfred Alufa-Gbokping, an economist and finance expert at the University of Ghana Business School, strongly disagrees, insisting that available data does not support such claims. We'll hear his perspective shortly, but first, here is Finance Minister Dr. Amin Adam.
The Ghanaian economy has come back to life following the difficulties we faced in the last 3 years. Macroeconomic stability is fast returning to our country. We all can see the indicators improving by the day. And now, we want to focus on growth, economic growth, which has also already demonstrated that the economy has recovered strongly. Last year, we were supposed to grow at 1.5%. We grew at 2.9%. Half this year, we're supposed to grow at 3.1%. We grew at 5.8%. The first half-year growth of 5.8% is more than the real GDP growth we recorded in the first half of 2019 by 0.4 percentage points, which means that this economy is back to the growth trajectory of the period before COVID. This is the job the president and the vice president have done to bring our economy back to life.
Well, it's a good time to delve deeper into this with Professor Godfrey Buckley, who joins us live via Zoom. Prof, I'm grateful to you for joining. Now, you described the government's conclusion about the growth of the economy as narrow. Why that?
Well, if you talk about good evening, and good evening to our cherished viewers. If you talk about the economy rebounding, that if you look at the macro numbers, you can't focus only on GDP. It's a very narrow way of looking at the recovery. You want to look at whether the recovery is broadening across the many macro indicators. And even if you look at GDP, and you look at the average GDP growth from 2017 to 2019, which is more than 6.5%, and you even look at the GDP growth for 2019, which was 6.5% overall, and you compare that to the first half growth, and even if you stretch that and compare that to end of year forecast from the IMF and other institutional bodies of 4.1% or 4.4% is still lower than the pre-pandemic growth, or still lower than the growth for 2019. But then you also want to look at other macro indicators, right? And look at inflation. Pre-pandemic inflation, December 2019 was 7.9%. Currently, October end inflation was 22.1%. Certainly, we have not recovered to pre-pandemic level. And then even if you look at the disaggregation of that growth, you see that we are not there. If you look at food inflation, compare that also to non-food inflation, pre-pandemic and post-pandemic, even if you look at current numbers, we are not there. Then again, more importantly, if you look at interest rate development, I mean, pre-pandemic macro level development, if you relate that to, let's say, policy rate from Bank of Ghana, the policy rate was 16%. As of December 2019, policy rate currently is 27%, even though Bank of Ghana Monetary Policy Committee met a couple of days ago and to come out. So it's still very high. We are not at the level. Then look at Ghana reference rates, right? Which was 16.11% pre-pandemic as at December 2019, you are looking at something in excess of 28% as we speak. If you look at treasury bill rate, 91-day treasury bill rate, it was around 14.72%. Treasury bill rate is currently more than 27%. If you look at the exchange rate as at December 2019, we are looking at 5.35 to a dollar, currently is more than 15 and all of that. So if you look at the totality of the evidence, it is not supportive of current government position that the economy has recovered to pre-pandemic level. Of course, I associate with the Minister of Finance comment that recovery is trickling in and the economy is rebounding, but we are not at pre-pandemic level.
Okay, but so if you want to take it back, which period of our history can you compare it to in terms of the rebounding that we are experiencing now?
If you look at other indicators and all of that, it will take us a while to say that the recovery that we are seeing at the macro level have started to impact Ghanaians positively.
Okay.
Right. So this is relative stability.
Okay.
But of course, there's still a lot that we have to do to make sure that the recovery is broadening, and then it's also people focus. Right. Okay. So we are not there yet. Then also a good way to look at it is whether this recovery is sustainable, especially post 2026. And our conclusion is that what we have done is to actually sacrifice our medium to long-term survivability for short-term praise. Because if you look at the price we have to pay for this recovery, which is also coming from the IMF supported program in terms of the IMF inflows, right? They are front-loaded. If you look at the relief from the debt restructuring, they are also front-loaded. So the bulk of the relief will all be utilized within the period that the IMF program is in force. Beyond the 2026, vulnerabilities exist that we have to manage. Then you want to also link that to energy and then reliability and look at the price and all of that. So I'm saying that if you take a holistic view to assessing this recovery, you will be a bit considerate in saying that we have arrived.
All right. I'm grateful to you, Prof, for joining us here. This is Journeys Prime. We'll take a break here. We'll be back with more. Please do stay. Welcome back from the break. Now, a resident who lost properties, including voter ID card, to a fire outbreak at Old Fadama have expressed uncertainty about the ability to vote during the 2024 general elections. Now, fire ravaged tens of makeshift structures at Old Fadama in Agbogbloshie on Sunday, leading to the loss of many properties in the area. Some of the victims who spoke to Journey say they are unsure if they will be able to vote on December 7 after losing their voter ID card to the fire. Adobe Asare has more in the following report.
Around 8:30 p.m. last night, that Sunday, 24th of November, 2024, certain parts of Agbogbloshie Old Fadama caught fire. It's still unclear how the fire started, but the good thing is the fire service were here on time to save the situation. Certain people have lost property, money, ID cards, among other things. But I'd like to hear from the residents here.
The moment I just reached my house, I can see that the fire started from the back there. So we rushed to the fire that we want to quench the fire, but we couldn't. So we make noise. Plenty people come, but we couldn't quench the fire. So before we realize, every room over here got to the fire. So we couldn't off the fire. So later, before we will see, our everything got burned.
Before we get notice of it, it has overcome everybody. So we want government to help us so that from our daily services, it's not that we are hearing much about it. So this is how we are keeping our head.
All we have, we lost it. So the government should do something concerning those things and help us to get at least something where we can be able to put our head with our families.
This is how the place is looking now, as most of the people here have been rendered homeless because their structures have been reduced to ashes. Although property and money have been lost, the good thing is no casualty has been reported yet. But the people here are looking forward to seeing the government come through for them, as well as other philanthropists who can help. For Joy News, my name is Adobe Asare, Agbogbloshie, Old Fadama.
Now, Vice President Dr. Mahamudu Bawumia says the government has made significant strides in addressing the housing deficit in the country. During an inspection and commissioning of phases 1, 2, and 3 of the TDC Affordable Housing Project in Tema, Dr. Bawumia revealed that the government has constructed over 1,000 housing units for the security services, ensuring that they have access to safe accommodations to support their critical roles in maintaining national security. The following report has more.
According to the Vice President, over 1,000 housing units have been constructed specifically for members of the security services in the Greater Accra region alone. This initiative, he says, ensures that security personnel have access to safe and decent accommodation. He also disclosed that through the rent assistance program, over 2,000 tenants nationwide have received financial support to cover rent payments.
Housing for Security Services. Our government recognizes the critical role of our security services and has prioritized their housing needs. Over the past 7 years, we have provided 1,000 housing units to the Ghana Police Service in Tema, Kwabena, and Tesano. Government launched the Rent Assistance Scheme in 2023. Under this program, the government provides rent advances through a service provider, allowing tenants to pay monthly without the burden of upfront costs. So far, this scheme has supported 2,400 beneficiaries.
On the stalled Saglemi housing project, Dr. Bawumia said work will soon resume after entering into another public-private partnership agreement to oversee its completion.
Ladies and gentlemen, regarding the Saglemi housing project, the government has taken decisive steps to resolve the challenges surrounding its completion. Through executive approval and a rigorous procurement process, a developer has been selected to carry the project forward.
Earlier, the Vice President commissioned the corporate head office of the Lands Commission, where he applauded the commission for its digital transformation. Dr. Balmia lauded the automation of land title certification, highlighting its impact on improving efficiency.
Today, with the aid of digitalization, the Lands Commission has been able to automate land title certificates, which reduces the potential errors that could arise from manual entries, thereby significantly enhancing accuracy and efficiency.
The Vice President also inspected the ongoing construction of a multi-purpose theatre at Trade Fair in La, which he says will be completed in 8 months and boost the nation's struggling creative arts sector.
Oh, the National Blood Service says lack of finances, personnel and infrastructure among a plethora of challenges facing the service, accounting for a shortfall in the nation's blood demand. According to the Chief Executive Officer of the National Blood Service, Dr. Shelley Osofori, this factor negatively affects the service's ability to mobilize blood units across the country, leading to a 40% gap in the nation's blood demand. She made this revelation at this year's National Blood Donation Day. Now, there's more in the following report by Prince Kwame Kuduga. The National Blood Service ensures an effective and coordinated approach to the provision of safe, adequate and efficacious blood and blood product to all patients requiring blood transfusion in both public and private healthcare institutions in the country. However, CEO of the service, Dr. Shelley Osofori, says lack of resources is affecting the delivery of this mandate.
Coupled with additional challenges we face as an institution, which has negatively affected our blood collection index, as stipulated by the World Health Organization. Our inadequacies have spanned from personnel to financial through to infrastructure.
Dr. Shelley Osofori says some patients are charged illegal fees at the blood banks before they are given blood.
We've made a few arrests in the past, but because our regulations were not passed, even when they ended up in police stations, we couldn't prosecute. I was told that there was a gentleman in Kolebu called McLean. I don't know him, but now that we know the name, we are going to try and clamp on that individual. He may be that scapegoat that we will use to ensure that the processes are sanitized.
Senior statesman and Rotarian Sam Okudjeto urged Ghanaians to cultivate the habit of voluntarily donating blood, as one does not know when they will be in need.
Important is for us to appreciate that you never know. It could be you yourself. It could be a member of your family that will need blood. That's why it is important for all of us to volunteer to donate, because you never know. It's possible. It could be you. And so it is important that we just emphasize this to all Ghanaians, to say that if you are able, please donate.
The National Blood Donor Day is celebrated to honor persons who have donated blood to save lives and to encourage others to follow suit. Samuel Akumeni from the Ashanti region is this year's overall best blood donor.
I feel that if you don't get blood, you're not a human body. So if you are a human body, that means you have a blood. So I encourage everybody to donate blood for everyone. For if you have a blood, you are a human being.
This year's Blood Donor Day was themed 24 years of celebrating giving in Ghana. Thank you, blood donors. Other outstanding individual donors and institutions were also awarded. For Joy News, Prince Kwame Kuduga's report read to you. Well, the election 2024 is just around the corner. As the political temperature rises, it's crucial to revisit the dynamics of the 2020 parliamentary elections that saw significant shift in Ghana's political landscape. The MPP suffered a major setback in 2020, losing 32 parliamentary seats, which led to a hung parliament, where both the MPP and the NDC secured 137 seats each. An analysis of the 2020 parliamentary results by the Joy News Research Desk reveals that 100 out of the 275 parliamentary seats were won narrowly, with victory margins being less than 10%. Now, lead data and research analyst joins me in studio with more. Kofi Ejay is here. Now, Isaac, first, tell me how the MPP, you know, could not get a majority seat in 2020.
Well, I think we should start from 1996. That tells an important story of how majority was actually formed, or the outlook of parliament since 1996. And you could see it.
You're not doing 92 because in 92, yeah, the MPP stayed out of that election.
So 1996, you could see a clear difference between the NPP in blue and the NDC in green. Vast difference. Now, I mean, 2000 was when we had the first round of it. You could see how close the parliamentary outlook was. 99 for the NDC versus 91 for the NDC.
The blue is the MPP, or
exactly is it? Blue is for the MPP.
So it means that in 99,
this is actually 2000 elections, and 99 for MPP, exactly. 91 for NDC. Okay. Very, very close in 2000. Mm. We saw the opening again in 2004, 2008, another round of, you see the closeness again. Until 2020, where we saw the first hung parliament ever in our first Republic.
So in 2008, the NDC won majority.
Majority, but seats. Very close. So what you realize is that whenever there's a runoff, there's that closeness in terms of the parliamentary outlook. So it tells a story of who will win the parliamentary election. Now, let's look at the seat that were lost to both the MPP and the NDC, and you could see the disaggregation in terms of the net losses and gains. Mm. Whilst the NPP lost 32 seats in the 2020 elections, the NDC was able to gain 31 seats.
I mean, that's a lot.
Very, very significant in terms of, I mean, the outlook in 2020. But this, for me, tells a story in terms of the outlook of the seats that were lost by the NPP. Let's look at the regional distribution. Mm. Central region was one of the regions that the NPP lost majority of the seats. 9 seats were lost in the central region, followed by Greater Accra region, Bono and Western. So you could see that just the first four, you have the 3 traditional swing regions in the central region is in the Greater Accra, the Western region, and you have the distribution across the other regions. Now there's this also this beautiful outlook that you see, not just the losses in 2020, but there were some regions that actually were somewhat, you know, I want to use the word faithful to the MPP, where they did not change their seats for the party. Ahafo was one of them, the northern region.
They didn't lose
there was
any
no
seats.
Change. Okay. There was no change. So they maintained their seats in the 2016 elections. Mm. Now, Northeast gave the MPP an additional seat. Volta region, we know of what happened.
Hawaii.
Exactly. Mm. And Savannah also gave the MPP 2 additional seats. So it wasn't just losses. In 2020, they made some significant, you know, achievement in these 3 regions as well. But for me, the 100 seats that were actually won with very, very narrow, they were won with very, very narrow margins, below 10%. Mm. The MPP won 44 of the 100 seats and the NDC 55. So going into this year's election, winning majority
that's
is very
99.
Important. Absolutely. But it's one independent candidate, which is also very close.
Sure.
So you add that, that's about, that makes the 100. Mm. The NDC is aware that, look, they won majority, but they are holding 55 seats, which were won with margins below 100, below 10%. Mm. NPP same, 44 seats below 10%. Mm. Now, this for me is also very, very interesting, the last one. These were seats won with the narrowest of the narrowest, in terms of the figures. Just look at Takwa and Suya.
Yeah, I mean, as it's
0.1%.
The Takwa story is that someone broke ranks from the MPP.
Exactly.
This person contested in the primary, well-resourced, and went in there and prosecuted a coordinated agenda.
Right?
Yes, yes. And put a lot of pressure. If you look at the vote the MPP candidate had, George Duka, and you compare to what the independent person had, if you compare to previous elections, it tells you that this is the MPP vote that this lady took out.
Exactly, because Takwa and Suhail is clearly an MPP seat.
Yeah.
So definitely what happens is that when you have a traditional blue or green seat and you have somebody, an aggrieved party member going independent, it's always a tricky game for the party.
Yeah.
Seshiri
I'm surprised by Seshiri also. Was it a contest between the former regional minister under the NDC time.
Exactly.
And Kweku Evrier.
Absolutely.
Maybe that's why.
One of the consensus that you saw that narrowing 0.1 percentage point.
Because they were all popular faces.
Absolutely. And for me, Ablekuma Central, one of the seats in the Greater Accra region, won with just 0.2 percentage point. Savlogu Pusiga. And you could see, Lejokuku for me this year will be very, very interesting, not just because of parliamentary. We saw the difference between Okoboy and Bernard Ayuku was just 1.7%.
And that's
presidential as well, just 7%. So it will be an interesting place for both parliamentary and presidential in this year.
Very, very interesting analysis. But you see a lot more of this as we get close to the day, and especially on the DDA itself. This is your election headquarters. This is where you get everything about this election. We'll take a break here. We'll be back with more. Please do stay.
Election headquarters is brought.